Hey, before we start the show today, I really needed your attention right here up front. If you're new to the show, I'm working with a documentary called The Messengers, a podcast documentary. And as I record this right now, on Saturday the 3rd, we only have 9 days. So by the time you listen to this, we'll be down to 7 days. And we're at 77% of our goal. We're so close, but yet so far. And the amount we're looking for is just the absolute bare bones minimum. So I'm asking you, if I've ever delivered any value to you, do me a favor, go to supportthemessengers.com. That's supportthemessengers.com. You can contribute anything you want, $5, $10. I think this one is cool, $25. You can have your name, your podcast, or your business featured in the credits of the film. Think about how cool this is going to be to be watching this movie someday, and at the end of it go, that right there, that's me going up the screen. So please, we really want to see this film made. Go to supportthemessengers.com. Today on episode number 530 of the School of Podcasting, I am so excited to have Jennifer Briney from the Congressional Dish podcast. You're going to find out just what happens when you deliver content that you just cannot get anyplace else. Hit it, ladies!
The School of Podcasting with Dave Jackson.
Podcasting since 2005, I am your personal podcast coach, Dave Jackson, thanking you so much from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're new to the show, we talk about all things podcasting. And what do? I bring my 20 plus years of helping people understand technology. I help you massage your message. I help you tackle the technology, face your fears, flatten the learning curve, and help you launch a successful podcast. Our website is schoolofpodcasting.com. Use the coupon code LISTENER, that's LISTENER, when you sign up and save a bunch. And I got to tell you, I'm so excited to have Jennifer Briney on the show today. Let me explain why. Because you're like, who? You might be thinking that. Who? You should know Jen, but here's the cool thing about it. You're going to learn today that her success didn't happen overnight. She's getting close to, real close, if you could put your fingers up, that close to 10,000 downloads per episode. She hasn't been afraid to try new things with her format. She realized early on that she had two choices, go crazy or do a good show. But you couldn't do, if she tried to do, yeah, so she kind of had to focus on just delivering good content. She started with horrible equipment and then later upgrade. She didn't let equipment stop her from launching her podcast. She's a great example of somebody taking control of her show and doing it the way that she wants to do it. And she's going to share today that dealing with haters, it takes a long-term vision to do that. And it's also at times a little easier said than done. And she talks about how she's going to have a paywall for some of her content because she wants to do some experimental episodes, and she'll explain kind of how she did an experimental episode and it was just horrible timing. Also, like I said, her content has led to her getting almost 10,000 downloads per episode. And oh yeah, she's just now starting to promote her show. So stay tuned for that. Couple quick things I want to get into here. I am, as you're listening to this, it will be, days away from Podcast Mid-Atlantic. If you go to podcastmidatlantic.com/SOP, this is in basically Philadelphia, New Jersey, you know, that kind of place. And it's going to be a lot of fun. We've got a ton of different speakers over there. I'm looking forward to hanging out with Jessica Kufferman, Heather Ordover, that is going to be awesome. I never met Heather. Jeff Bradbury, can't wait to talk to Jeff. Rob Greenlee, Jessica Rhodes, all sorts of really cool people. Mark Asquith, I think I just butchered your last name. Joel Bogus is there. Tina Dietz is there. Now that just made my day right there. Tina Dietz, because that girl can bring the sarcasm almost as much as I can. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's this weekend as you read this. It's the 9th and 10th. So I'm looking forward to that. If you're anywhere near that area, come on down. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. It's not like any other conference you've ever been to. There is a high level of creativity. We like to make things up on the spot. Not that we're winging it, but there is some improv in there. And it's a really cool group. Last year was a lot of fun. Last year was the first year we did it in a high school gym. This is Otel. Super Joe Pardo is running the whole thing. It's going to be a lot of fun. Again, go to podcastmidatlantic.com/SOP. All right, so let me tell you a little bit about Jen Briney and Congressional Dish. This is the perfect example of, if you read the book Platform by Michael Hyatt, he talks about wow content. She delivers wow content. And when you hear it and you realize that this isn't made up, it's real, it blows your mind that this is stuff that is not on the TV. In fact, it's so good. It is so good that there are times that I have to turn it off because it just makes me that upset. I need to punch something in the face. It really is that good. And then she also makes it entertaining. And she does this, and you'll hear this. I'm going to play a clip of this a little later. She tries to restrain herself. And what she does is, if she does end up cursing, she replaces it with the sound of a golf club swing. And this stops her show from being explicit, and it adds just a pinch of comedy to the show to keep it light. So I'm super stoked to welcome Jen Briney to the show. Jen, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, and thank you for saying those nice things. That's very kind of you.
You are in a lot of my presentations when I talk about, you know, you, number one, the fact that you can say whatever you want. We'll talk about that today.
I thought that might be coming up.
Yeah, and the fact that you give stuff that sadly you can't get anyplace else. If ABC, NBC, and Fox ever get their act together, you might, you know, have to sweat it out a bit, but I don't think so. You've got such a head start on them. But how long have you been doing it?
About 4 years. It'll be 4 years in September. Yeah, this is my second full Congress. Every Congress is 2 years long, so I'm just figuring out how to cover it as I go.
And then does it seem like completely different? Like, are they really that different? Well, I guess I know you get people that come in and people that go out, but is it like a kid where it has a completely different personality?
Yeah, the two that I covered were different because the first time it was the Republicans controlled the House of Representatives and the Senate was controlled by the Democrats. And when I started this, I knew nothing about Congress, like quite literally nothing. And so I decided, in order to learn about Congress, I would read all the bills that passed the House of Representatives and tell people what I was finding. That was kind of like the shtick for the first 2 years. And so I was really focusing on the Republicans in the House, but kind of watching the bills progress, there was this stop that would always happen in the Senate. And so I actually found that Congress to be more extreme than this one, where the Republicans are controlling the House and the Senate, because there isn't this automatic stoppage on the bills. So I've actually found them to be more responsible than I was expecting them to be based on my first Congress. So yeah, it is a different vibe. And then having the Speaker of the House change in the middle of the Congress also changed the vibe of this one
just
too. So yeah, just a little. We got a different guy in charge now.
I've heard you say that sometimes bills are 5 pages long and sometimes they're just insane tree killing monsters that have pages and pages. Is there an average that?
No, somewhere between 1 and 2,000 is really like, I really never know what I'm getting into, although I'm getting better at it. So I'm finding that these government funding laws are in the 2,000 page range because they're not funding the government properly. It should be done with 12 separate bills, and instead they're doing it all at once in a giant bill that's generally 2 to 3 months late, and they stuff all kind of goodies onto the back of it. I need weeks and weeks to deal with those. But then there's other bills, especially ones regarding Wall Street, that are sometimes only 2 to 3 pages, but will still take me 2 to 3 days to get to because I don't understand what I'm looking at.
What does a typical episode take? Like, are we talking days, weeks, hours?
Weeks. If I have 2 to 3 weeks for an episode, I am now able to lead a normal life. Where I was trying to do it weekly for a while, I was just constantly in emergency mode. I was getting stressed and sick, and I had to stop it. So I'm finding that 2 weeks is allowing me the time to do all the background stuff. Like today, the fit that I had before coming on air with you is that my printer stopped working and I have to print a shipping label to mail my deposit. So it's like there's all that administrative crap that I have to deal with. So I give myself 2 to 3 days to deal with that. And then it takes me about a week and a half to do everything else. And then for the longer episodes, sometimes it is nice to have a 3 week stretch of time because I'm releasing on the second and fourth Sunday of every month. And so I do get these bonus months where there's 5 Sundays. I love those. And so sometimes I will have 3 weeks to do a longer episode. So like my next episode is on the student, Every Student Succeeds Act. And that's 500 pages. I'm going to be reading that for a week nonstop. And then I have to produce the episode. So it's a lot of work.
Why in the world did you start this podcast? What inspired you?
I was getting really frustrated with feeling like I didn't know what was actually going on in this country. Like if you turn on the news, I'm finding out a lot of like fluffy stories, but I felt like there were things I wasn't being told. So I started watching C-SPAN a little bit more regularly. And as people do that, the hearings in particular, you find some really fascinating stuff. So I was watching C-SPAN and I was noticing that they were discussing things that were happening that just weren't being discussed on the news. And yet they're legislating this and changing laws actively. So I started reading the Congressional Record. And then I started really looking into these debates and being like, wow, there's stuff happening right now that affects all of us and no one's talking about it. And so in particular, like I remember the moment where the idea really came to me. I saw Tom Cole of Oklahoma slip into an energy and water bill, a provision that protected secret campaign contributions. And I'm watching this going, there's no way that I actually saw that. Like, and he was bragging about it. Like, no, I can't be understanding this correctly. So I looked in the Congressional Record, was able to read his words for myself. And sure enough, that's exactly what he did. He successfully got it into that bill. And so then I started wondering, well, how often does this happen? And so in 2012, I started reading the Congressional Record more regularly, and it happened all the time, which is the reason this Tom Cole guy felt so comfortable going on TV and saying, yes, this is what I'm doing, because the only people that are watching are his donors, but people like you and I, and God knows the media, are not paying attention. So that's when I decided this is something that I can do. I can pay attention. I don't know exactly how I'm going to do it yet, but I can draw some attention to these amazing things that are happening in Congress that aren't being covered by The Hill covers them, but if you're not looking specifically for congressional information, I could do it in a different, more entertaining way.
Now, did you have any kind of radio speaking kind of background?
No, I just got lucky in the fact that I had a decent voice for this. I have a communications degree. So, but the thing about my school is that we were all trained to be in Hollywood and in PR. So most of my classes were geared towards how to advertise. And I think that peek behind the curtain is also one of the reasons I'm so disgusted by advertising and the whole model in general, is because that's what I was trained in. And then when I graduated and said I didn't want to do this, I was really lost for a lot of years. I didn't know what to do. And it just turned out, you know, that radio worked for me. So
when you started off, what kind of gear were you using?
Oh, the saddest of gear. I got a podcasting kit, which was actually pretty cool. They sold it for $30, but it came with a mixer, which was about the size of my iPhone, but like taller. And it could fit one microphone. And they sent me a microphone, which it was horrible. And the stand was so small that it would just fall over all the time. So there are a few episodes where you can hear the like clunk, clunk, clunk. And I kept them in there because I was on a good roll and I liked the way I sounded. So I left it in and, you know, beginners, the bumps in the road. But yeah, that podcasting kit was horrendous. I would love to see someone make something like that, though, where it was good equipment for someone who was trying to podcast solo, just wanted the basics, but didn't really know what to get. But for, I'd say I probably had that for like 6 months. And then when I decided I wanted to do this for real, I invested in the Heil PR40, which is what I'm using now, and, you know, the better equipment. But it was, I had the worst equipment to start. I couldn't even tell you like what brand it was or anything.
But the good news is you started, and that's the beautiful thing of it. And as I always say, you can't improve what you don't start, and you jumped in the water, which is awesome. Do you ever have like trouble mentally handling the content that you're covering?
I do, actually. And when that happens, I have a really good husband who knows exactly what to do. So it's funny. One of my favorite shows is the John Oliver show.
Yes.
And when he sees I'm in the bad place, I can't watch it. I'm actually behind by like 3 months. I can't watch it because it feels like I'm watching work stuff. And so like he came home last weekend and he was like, all right, we're going to watch Beavis and Butthead Do America. And so that's what we did. We just watched something as stupid as we could possibly find. But overall, I mean, I've always dealt with anxiety, always, my whole life. And so when I was finding myself to not know what was going on in the world and my frustration from knowing what's happening in Congress and having no outlet, I've actually found that Congressional Dish as a whole has been therapy for me because I feel like I am now doing something about it. And the more I learn about the way our system works, the more I've realized that the people together, we can all do something about it. We're not actually as powerless as my generation in particular has been led to believe. And so the more I learn, the more empowered I feel, the better I feel, and that I'm able to sleep at night better than I was before the podcast, ironically.
Have you ever been close to quitting?
No. I mean, the closest we came to maybe having to throw in the towel is when my husband lost his job in late 2013. That was, it was a year into the podcast. We had decided together that for 1 year I was going to try this and not worry about making any money. I wasn't going to be waiting tables. I wasn't going to be trying to make money through this. It was just try it for a year, see what happens. And so that was September of 2013. He lost his job in December of 2013. So it was only 2 months in. I was only making like $25, but those first five people that signed up and subscribed gave me enough hope that we decided to move into our parents' vacation house on a golf course. I did wait tables full time and Joe worked at the golf course. So I was doing double duty for most of 2013, but that got us through it. But once we made that decision, if we're going to move across the country in order to keep this going, there's really no quitting after that. And that was the moment where I was like, are we doing this? Yes or no? And there's actually an episode where we have that conversation on the air. So you can actually hear the closest I came to quitting. And that conversation lasted like 20 minutes before it was like, okay, how do we do this? It was a pretty easy decision for both of us.
Over the years, what's changed? That have you changed the format at all? Have you little lessons along the way that you go, oh, if I were to start that again, I'd do this differently?
In the beginning, I tried to read every bill. I really wanted to do that. Everything that passed the House of Representatives. I mean, you can hear it for 2 years. I tried my best, but I was really upset when in 2015, I had to give that up because it just was too overwhelming. There were too many pages, too many bills. It was too hard to filter. I had no work-life balance. But what I've switched it to now is that I'm looking at the bills I feel are the most vital or the least covered or just the most interesting stories. And so I am now acting as the filter and going more in depth on the things that I do learn about. And I'm enjoying the show structure so much more now, being able to do that research, because that's what the show was missing before. If I had to read 50 bills for one episode, I couldn't really track down the money the way I wanted to. I couldn't track down the history the way I wanted to. And so I'm having a lot more fun with it now, but giving up on that initial mission, it's still kind of like, it feels like failure, even though I know it's just evolution, but it still bothers me that I wasn't able to read every bill I wanted to. But if our congressmen aren't doing it, like, you know, how am I supposed to do it? So
you've read all these different bills. Are there any over the 4 years that you just go, like, I can't believe this got passed?
Yeah. I mean, there's the Kevin Yoder one. Yeah. That one just makes me so mad because when we had that Wall Street crash in 2008, one of the things that they were doing is they were gambling with our deposits. You know, like the Wall Street, it's basically a casino. You're betting on which company is going to grow and which one isn't. And so the banks, they did something called the push out rule in the Dodd-Frank financial reform, which basically said that, okay, big bank, if you want to gamble on Wall Street, go ahead and do it, but gamble with your own profits, your own investments. You have to have these be separate. So it was like there was their investment banking wing and their commercial banking wing. And the banks literally wrote a bill. It was written by Citigroup lobbyists, most of the lines. It was a very short bill, but it had moved through the House of Representatives. It stopped in that barrier I was telling you about, the Senate. The Senate said no to this. But because they funded the government by passing a 2,000-page monster, which was released in the middle of the night, that was attached by Kevin Yoder. And so that actually became law because the repercussions of not signing a government funding law is that the government shuts down again. So that was just, that was horrific for me to open up that 2,000-page bill and see this thing that I was so opposed to just attached as if it was a dingleberry. That's what I called it. I call these things dingleberries when it happens. So that one, I'm still amazed that that happened.
Now you can see where this is where I say you want to punch things when you listen to Jen's podcast.
Yeah, the rage bubbles. But I mean, you can see me right now. I get a kick out of all of it. So I guess I have a sick sense of humor.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your audience, which is sizable. What are you hearing from your audience? Do you have any kind of because of my podcast? Or, I mean, are these people taking action on the stuff they're hearing, or what's your audience up to?
They are. And that's been really encouraging. I keep getting emails from college students who are saying, I was told my whole life that my vote didn't matter. And now I'm registered. And thank you so much for making me feel like there's something I can do. I get a lot of people who tell me that for the first time, I just wrote to my congressman and told them what I wanted. And I have people that have argued with the staffs in their congressman's office and find it therapeutic. And then there was another guy who emailed me this week saying that the staff member he talked to didn't even know the issue he was saying was happening. And that's happened to me too, where I call and they're just like, what bill are you talking about? I'm like, the one you're voting on tomorrow, you know? So it's like, I do think that Congressional Dish is helping people to communicate with their people and empowering themselves to actually vote. Cause that's my main mission. There's too many people that aren't voting, and it's the same people voting over and over again, which is why we're getting the same results. More people have to get into the process. So yeah, I'm encouraged by that.
That's what puts gas in your tank, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. When I get those emails, it helps me deal with the other stuff, you know, like there's always the haters and the annoying people. But when I get those emails, especially from a millennial who wasn't going to vote and now is, it keeps me going. It really does.
Because you have a sizable audience, you know, everybody's like, if I can just get to, you know, X amount of 1,000 downloads, I could monetize. And, you know, I was thinking about this today. You could have some really cool sponsors. Like Massengill would be a great, because you could say, speaking of douchebags, let's talk about, or hemorrhoid cream. You could have all these great sponsors that would fit with the topics of your show. I'll let you answer that. Why don't you have sponsors?
I mean, so much of it just comes to me just being grossed out by advertising being absolutely everywhere. And if I can create an advertising free space, like I definitely want to. One of the reasons our media is so corrupted and hesitant to tell us these stories is that their funding model, it's dependent on corporate sponsors. When you watch Fox and MSNBC and CNN, you'll see that there's commercials for pharmaceutical industry in between their segments. And so you have to remember that every time you see a commercial, that news segment is getting paid. And so whether it's overt or whether it's just self-censoring, it does cause people to say, well, my paycheck depends on keeping me and my advertisers happy, where my paycheck, as in Jen and Congressional Dish, my paycheck depends on keeping my listeners happy, or at least keeping them informed. I mean, sometimes I talk about controversial stuff. They don't always agree with me. But if I'm producing a good show, you know, they're willing to stick around. And if someone does get mad, I've had a couple people get mad at me about saying something, but if they do get mad, I lose a small portion of my income, not a significant amount to where the show goes down. So the crowdfunding thing, it allows me to say anything I feel that needs to be said, even if it's controversial. And it's, I don't ever want to give up that freedom.
You back up everything you talk about on your show. Your show notes are insane. So it's all fact-based. So when you say that to somebody and they go, well, I don't like the fact that you said blah, blah, blah. Why would they pull just that's just the way it is? Is that just a case?
It's usually ideological. The latest one that happened, I did an episode on there's people in Congress who are trying to impeach the IRS commissioner.
Yes. And it's not on the news.
No, it's not on the news. And if it was on the news, you probably wouldn't find out the real reason they're doing it, which is to protect secret campaign contributions. So it's all about secret money. It's a fascinating story. I covered it very different from how it actually is on the news. It's on Fox News. They're trying to demonize the guy. And so it's a different way of it being explained to people. And the guy who was like, oh, you're ignoring all the corruption of this man and blah, blah, blah. And then pulled the funding. It's like, okay, like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, you've believed everything you've been told. I told you something very different. I understand that can be disturbing and learning something different from your worldview, and some people can't handle it and they go away. And it's okay. You know, in the same day that he took back his $5, I had $15 in new subscriptions. So it's like, do I get upset when someone you know, says that I don't know what's going on. Yeah. But it's not going to make me change the show because I have so many other people that now have crowdfunded it and I don't really have to worry about it.
What are you doing to market the show?
Well, up until about 3 months ago, nothing, like nothing. But now I've hired a podcasting agent to connect me to other shows and that's going okay. There have been some bumps I'm not thrilled with, but I am getting introduced to other people because I have found that most people who send me a message and say, hey, this is how I found you, it's always from an appearance on someone else's show. And so that's why I'm trying to get out there as much as I possibly can, especially before the election. I mean, I'm so frustrated. I know that my numbers sound good and I don't mind telling people, you know, what they are. I'm at a little bit under 10,000. And so I know that that's great in the podcasting sphere, but it's not going to change Congress, you know? So it's like, I'm really looking for like, first step is Dan Carlin numbers. I want the 250,000 and then go from there because that's enough of a voice to be like, hey, like, let's change this, you know, let's vote for the House of Representatives. Let's do this strategically. Right now, I don't have that big of a microphone. So I know I need to focus on marketing for my real goal of getting better congressmen in there. I mean, what am I doing this for if it's not going to make any effect on the body that I'm watching?
Well, I know I saw you on an interview with Jesse Ventura.
That was on RT. That was right after I did a Reddit AMA that had hit not only not number one on the AMA page, but number one on Reddit. And so that was the big bump for Congressional Dish. Before that, I was getting about 3,000 downloads per episode. After that, I thought it was settling at 10,000. It turns out it actually settled closer to 8 when the dust really came down. So, but still, that's a 5,000 download per episode jump. And that was from Reddit. But that's how Jesse Ventura's booker found me, was through the Reddit AMA. And so I just got this email saying, hey, would you like to come on the show? And it was great. He was really nice. In fact, I should probably be emailing him to go back because he asked me to. So it was an exciting experience. They picked me up in a black Escalade and they drove me into San Francisco and I got to, like, I was in between people that were going on CNN. So it was very legit in that regard. I did get a feel for how this works. They put a microphone in my ear and, or not a microphone, you know, one of those
monitor
things.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I could hear someone in New York talking to me. It was very odd.
Yeah. I think it's a great interview. The thing I love about it is Jesse's behind some sort of screen thing that, you know, whatever you call it, a green screen. And the green screen is the same color as his glasses. So at times it looks like there's a hole in his head. It's a brilliant effect.
Well, what I found kind of fun is that behind me, there's a picture of San Francisco. It's a TV set that they just put behind my head. So anytime you're watching CNN, like I was the same place that they go, it's just them sitting in front of an actual TV. It was so low tech. And then for the camera, they had a picture of Barack Obama, like a Newsweek he was on. They had taped a Newsweek to the back of the camera so that you would have something to look at. So the whole time I'm doing that, I'm looking at Barack Obama's face. And then I started looking around because it was really awkward. But yeah, it was like, it made me feel more professional to see that even the professionals are doing some really MacGyver type things.
Scotch tape and paper clips. Yeah. Well, I know when you first started the podcast, you were doing everything. And I know recently you started using an audio editor. Now that you're on the other side of that, is this something that you're kicking yourself and going, oh, I should have done this 2 years ago? Or what's that like for somebody who's thinking, I wonder if I should hand this off to somebody else?
Well, I mean, hiring, I'll say his name, Daryl Darnell. He owns Pro Podcast Solutions. That's who I hired. And it was the best decision I've ever made. It's just so easy. I send him the files and like my show's kind of complicated. Because when I'm recording it, I can't do it all in one because it is so fact-based. So I can't really go completely off the cuff like other people can. So we've had to develop our own system for how to put it together. And the amount of time that it took for us to be a well-oiled machine was not very long at all. I send them these editing guides that just have like my recorder. I have the numbers of the segments from my Zoom recorder. And then I'll send him, you know, number 1, 2, 5, 7, this clip of this congressman, 9, 12, 15, this clip. And I send him that. And then within a day, he sends it back. I mean, it's amazing. And so what I used to have to do was record the whole thing. Then I'm exhausted. I take an hour off and then I spend 8 hours fiddling with the volume and all that because I'm not a professional. So I'm sure I was doing it in a really slow, stupid way. And he gave me an entire day back out of my process. And then on top of that, when I listened to the hearings, I also send him timestamps and just a general idea of what the clips I want. So I just write down the timestamps, who the speaker is. I send it to Daryl. He sends me back transcripts and all the sound clips. That's also saving me an enormous amount of time and has made the show so much richer because I can put so many more sound clips in it than I could before, because it's not me having to physically go and grab every single one of them. So he's a godsend. And yeah, it costs me money, but it's worth every single penny, every penny.
Well, and in the end, I would think that kind of pays for itself, because now you're spending, again, more time on your content. That content gets people talking about your show. That leads to more people donating, and the donating pays for Daryl. So in the end, you have to take a little step backwards in profit to get that going. But I think in the long run, and plus you're not crying and screaming and, you know, trying to operate on 2 hours sleep and things of that nature.
It's true. The number of fits that I've had have gone down dramatically. And I actually think you can even hear it on the show. I mean, for people that listened in the first 2 years, I got a little crazy even on air. But that's the thing. I was in constant stress mode and I don't feel like it's that bad anymore. And now I'm in the process of outsourcing some other stuff. But the challenge is how to find the right person for the right job. Mm. One of the lessons I've learned from this is that Daryl specializes in the things that I hired him for. And so that's kind of the, you know, I've hired friends for other stuff and it's worked out like not so good because I have to be the trainer. I don't know what I'm doing. I haven't known what I'm doing since the beginning. I'm just making it up. My specialty is to be the on-air host and the person who can read the Congress stuff. Everything else should be outsourced. And so that's still something that I'm working on. There's a lot more that I need to slough off, but the audio editing was... it was key. That was key.
Being that you are a female, I was, you know, this is kind of sexist of me because I don't ask this to guys that I talk to. Have you had any creepy dude stories, for lack of a better phrase?
But I have gotten the patronizing emails of people telling me like what I should be doing. The rant that you heard this morning, I went off because I'm keep getting these emails about my tone.
Yes.
And like, yeah, I'm sarcastic. That's why people like me. It's why they've always liked me, because I'm obnoxious. And people want me to be more professional. And it's almost exclusively from men that one's come from. There was one little old lady, but mostly it comes from men. And it's those patronizing ones telling me that this is how I can do this better, from someone who's never podcasted before. You know, like, who are you to give me any advice at all, especially unsolicited? And that's a dude thing. That's an irritating dude thing. But other than that, everyone's been pretty great.
Well, and I was laughing so hard. I might play a clip of this.
Okay.
And so what makes me legit is backing it up with facts. Fact checking everything I tell you. I know, it's a crazy idea. But there is value in what I'm doing here, and I'm not going to change it because of your emails where you basically tell me that you don't like the way I talk. Too bad. If you want NPR, email NPR and tell them to cover Congress. Until they do so, you're stuck with me. All right? So here is my message to everyone who doesn't like me or my tone. Fuck off. This is a free podcast. So don't bitch about something that is free and that you are not paying for. The people that say this to me are never the ones that are helping me do it. Never. It's like, hey, I know you're giving me this thing for free, but let me tell you how to change it for me. Just so it's tailored to my exact liking. No. No, 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 no. And that's the thing. That is why I chose the value for value listener supported model. Because even if there is one person who's paying me significantly and they say, hey, change your podcast and tailor it just for me, I can say bye-bye. Because what if I only had one funder? What if I only had one big corporation that was paying for this podcast and they sent me the same type of email and said, hey, Jen, how about you take your tone down a little bit, little lady, or else we're going to pull the funding? Well, then I might have to listen. But when it's just some asshole sending me an email, I don't have to listen. And I can just keep doing this podcast the way that a lot of people seem to like, with my snotty attitude and all.
Where did the golf club come from? Did you thought beeps were too boring and...
I thought they were too jarring. And also, like, I like that the golf swing finishes most of the words, you know, like, think about the bad ones. They all have that like hard end.
Yes.
So it's like, it finishes the words for me. You know exactly what I'm saying, but it doesn't disqualify the podcast from being in China and India and all of these places that, you know, don't allow explicit content.
Right.
I can still get those messages to the American voters we have living there and not censor myself. It was the only compromise I could come up with, because otherwise I need to censor myself. I'm not good at that. And it's not as much fun, you know? So I didn't want to censor anything. I wanted to be able to say whatever was coming out of my mouth at the time and not worry about it. But at the same time, allow people, especially in the South, that don't like those words,
right,
to still listen to it. People can listen to it in the car with their families. People can listen to it in other countries. So it was the best compromise I can come up with.
Well, and for me, it makes it entertaining. Like every time it happens,
it's funnier.
I giggle. Yeah, I'm like, okay.
I think when I hear it unedited and then I heard it edited, because I made people listen to that before I aired that one, I was like, this might be too much. It sounded harsher without the golf swing. It was funny with the golf swing. It was kind of rude without it. So the tone changes too.
I'll put it this way. I went and saw Ghostbusters when it first came out. I don't think I laughed in that movie. I laughed so hard listening to that today. Because it was just like, I'm like, did she just say, oh my gosh. And then it was like, just so get off my lawn, kind of like, it's my podcast. And then you just said exactly the truth.
Yeah. And I think I learned a lesson just in podcasting from recording that, which is that I had all of my stuff already set up. And when I read that email, I instantly went to the recorder. And that's the first time I've done that. Like, usually I wait until it's recording time, but I was feeling something. I went for it. It was definitely in the moment. It's the first time I've done that. And I learned that even though it was rude, it was authentic. Everything I said, I meant. And I've gotten so many compliments on that piece of the podcast. I was afraid people were going to get so mad at me. It's been the exact opposite.
But you haven't got anybody to say, well, that's over the top, nothing, all positive.
No, I'm getting a barrage of emojis on Twitter. Lots of like little hand claps and smiley faces. And no, and it's from people that are my Twitter buddies. They loved it. And then the people that didn't like my tone, I haven't heard a word from them since. And that's kind of my goal.
Yeah.
It's like, if you don't like the way I talk, I don't want to hear from you anyway.
Well, the thing I also liked, at least in today's show, is there's no big grand poobah ending to your show. When you like, because there's a spot where like, okay, here's the last story. And like today, there was like a, I don't know, maybe a 4-second pause to where it's like, where'd Jen go? And then you're like, okay, now we're going to talk about, and you just went into your rant. I thought it was interesting that you just like, you know, when the show's over without making a big deal about it.
And that's a way that the podcast has changed too, because I used to spend a lot of time looking for music to separate the different segments. This is when Music Alley was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as Music Alley disappeared, I mean, I wasn't able to find copyright free music as easily as I was on that Mevio directory. And then when you hear about all the copyright issues that come along with music, I was like, you know what, let's just drop all the music and people will get it. And sure enough, there hasn't been a single complaint that the music is gone. And I feel the same way. I feel like that little gap is enough to let you know that we're doing something different now. And yeah, it seems to be working. I'm really happy to hear you say that, because it's working for me too.
Because at the end, you kind of go over and you thank everybody who's donated and you kind of give a little behind the scenes stuff. Has that always been at the end, or have you experimented with that in different places?
No, I've experimented with a lot of it. I mean, I have to tell people that the show is listener supported. And so that I've moved around a lot. I used to do it in the beginning. I feel like I lose new people with that. You know, I really just want to get immediately into the content. So I've moved that into the middle. So that kind of breaks it up at this point. You'll have the meat of the episode, and then it goes directly into like basically my pitch for all intents and purposes. And then I thank people. And that structure seems to be working. So it's like, you know, that if you listen and you don't want to hear me thank people and like jibber jabber, just turn it off. You know, it gives people the freedom to either listen to it or not. You know that I'm not hiding any information in there. Now, nothing is set in stone, but that's the one that's working the best in all the ones I've tried.
And I know you've also shared like kind of personally what's going on. Like you mentioned how you let your audience know that you are moving. I wanted to reach through the car and give you a hug, because you talked about how you had some pets die. And I was just like, I just wanted to give you a cyber hug. I just felt so bad for you. Have you ever had any feedback from your audience on that? That like, hey, I don't care about this stuff. Talk more politics.
Yeah. Actually, pretty recently, I got a negative iTunes review, although it wasn't even that negative. The guy gave it 2 stars mm-hmm. and said that I was misrepresenting what the show was about and said that I used it as my personal diary. And that one kind of stung, where it's like, you know, I don't really put myself in the meat of the show very much. If I have a story that's related, I'll put it in. But at the end, I have been encouraged by our group of friends in podcasting to let my audience know me a little bit better, to open myself up. And so when someone does tell me to stop it, that hurts personally. And it's like, I'm not trying to hurt myself through podcasting. So there is a very, very good chance I will be reaching out to my lovely people at Libsyn to close off a lot of new content in my Congressional Dish app, because I feel like the people that are helping me with this podcast, they deserve more of me than the random strangers who are just trolling me and trashing me. And so I do feel like at some point there's going to be another segment where I can do experimental episodes or extra stuff or conversations with listeners or just tell people what's going on with me. And it'll just be my community, because opening myself up like that, that's the hardest part. That's
yeah. And then somebody comes along and pokes you and you're like, well, what the heck? Well, so how do you deal with that?
Well, I'm in the process of getting a therapist. I'm not even kidding, because there's no one in my personal life that deals with this. There's a few people that I've met along the way. Like, I'm becoming more friendly with Kara Santa Maria. She's on TV, and so she's dealt with this a lot. And so if it got really bad, I could reach out to her, but none of my like close friends deal on a day-to-day basis with random strangers giving them advice on who they are. So it's really hard. And it's also, it's a weird profession to have, because it's at the one point the most social thing I've ever done, and yet the most isolating job I've ever had. I don't have coworkers. It's me and my dog. So it's very disorienting. I don't really know how to deal with it. My husband is getting a little tired of me talking about it. He's lovely. He'll listen to everything. But I do feel like I need to go somewhere to just try and talk it out, because it is very confusing for me. And the negative stuff, it affects me more than I think it should. And I need to have a thicker skin if I am going to do this and get up into the Dan Carlin numbers. I mean, I definitely have some fear of success here, because once you get up to those numbers, I mean, the crazies come out of the woodwork, and I don't know if I'll ever be ready for that.
Here's an exercise I did. I took my total number of downloads and divided I had 4 1-star reviews in iTunes. So I took 4 and divided it by 1.3 million. And it turns out, and it turns out to be 0.003%. So not,
that's a good idea.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, so 0.0003% of my audience thinks I'm an idiot. And I'm like, okay, I can live with 0.0003.
Yeah.
That's completely normal. I don't know why it is, but it is the way it is.
Well, and people don't know either when they sit down at the computer what they're going to say that's going to trigger me. You know, like, they don't know my background. So it's like the guy that sent me the email about the tone that set me off, most of his email was actually pretty nice. He wasn't really trashing me. Like, that's what I feel bad about. He's probably going to hear that and be like, whoa, girl. But that came from a lifelong issue of my dad telling me to watch my tone. Like, my mom would do something that didn't make any sense. And I'd be like, but dad, this doesn't make sense. And he's like, yeah, but you took that tone, so I can't help you. So this is like a childhood, like, injustice when I hear that, because he just didn't want to fight with my mom. And so it was like, you tell me my tone is wrong, and it just set me off like a firecracker. And so this guy had no way to know that. But you never know when you're telling someone that their personality is wrong, what button you're going to hit. And I have a lot of buttons. So yeah, it's a constant struggle. Constant struggle.
I mentioned earlier that you got to go on, Jesse Ventura. Any other kind of because of your podcast kind of stories that you want to share?
I got to actually stand in front of a bunch of people this year for the first time as an authority and speak to a group of people. I got to speak at Podcast Movement.
Nice.
And that was new to me. I've never been the authority on anything before. And so that was super exciting. And then also, I've just gotten to meet people that would have no interest in talking to me otherwise. So I've developed a friendship with Mike Herrera, who's the lead singer of MXPX. Who am I to be friends with an actual rock star? Like, that's ridiculous. I've gotten to meet, I've mentioned Kara a few times. She's so lovely and so smart. And it's just, she's someone I look up to. So to actually be friends with her is awesome. And, you know, there's people that I get to chat with on Twitter that I have no business talking to. So it's stuff like that. I've made friends in the podcasting community that, you know, I was so nervous, you know, when I met Daniel J. Lewis for the first time, and now he's my friend. So it's broadening my world in so many ways. A lot of them I just never saw coming. It happens all the time. It's just getting more and more amazing. So yeah, it's great.
Any plans for Congressional Dish going forward? Anything that you're like, I might be trying this or anything like that?
Well, definitely the paywall. That's going to be something new. It's something that I decided to do because, like I told you, because of the personal stuff, I would love to be able to have a paywall where I just put up these conversations where I can experiment, and it doesn't risk hurting the show. Because one of the things that happened to me with that Reddit AMA is that right after I did that, the episode I had recorded the week before got 30,000 hits. And it was awesome, except it was an experimental episode. It was an episode where a friend of mine sat down, we watched a hearing together, we were commenting, we were being snarky, we had a lot of fun, but it was an experiment. And so a lot of people tuned in to hear that episode and said either, wow, I really like this, and came back and didn't hear that the next time, or would have liked the actual show and heard that instead. And so I am more nervous about doing experiments now because of that. Like, I feel like Congressional Dish has a formula. And if I want to do stuff that's a little bit more loose, I want to do it behind the paywall. So that's definitely coming. And then I also want to make the website more user-friendly. I think the show notes themselves are fine, but the website is a big old mess. And so I'm going to save some money and just pay to get that revamped in some way. What I need to figure out is like how I actually want it to change. But yeah, that's coming in the future too. A more user-friendly Congressional Dish show notes website.
And have you decided what you're going to use for the paywall?
Libsyn.
Well, there you go.
Libsyn, my app. Yeah. Cause it's free. So, or at least for my listeners, it's free.
Right.
So, and I know that it's powerful enough. I don't really know the tech part, but what also makes me feel comfortable doing it with Libsyn is that I've become friends with the people that work there, and they know how tech stupid I am. And so it's like, I know I can call Crystal and be like, now walk me through this as if you would a 3-year-old, and she'll do that for me. Yeah. So just knowing I have a team to back me up with all my incredibly stupid questions, that's why I'm going that route.
Beautiful.
Unless you want to talk me out of it.
But. No, I just figured if I didn't ask, I was pretty sure that was the answer to that. And if I don't ask that, Rob's going to be like, you should have asked her who was...
No, I love Libsyn. I'm very devoted to Libsyn. So yeah, I'm awesome. Not going anywhere.
Let's do one more question and then we'll let you go. For the brand new person that's thinking about starting a podcast, your advice would be?
Start. There's no reason to wait. Just start. It's not your first few episodes. You're not going to be proud of them 4 years down the road. You're going to be mortified no matter what. So just start, because like I said, I started with a $30 piece of crap microphone. It worked out fine. The show grew. I got better. But if you're waiting for that perfect moment, it's never going to come. So just do it now.
There you go. Well, everybody go over to congressionaldish.com, find it in iTunes, and I'll have links to this all out in the show notes, and you can subscribe. It's like I say, it's a really, really good show. It's amazing. I remember the one day I just wanted to like punch everything I saw. Is I was listening to your show. It was in the morning. I went downstairs and I turned on the TV, and literally like they were like, blah, blah, blah. And this is an actual story. Blah, blah, blah. Last night, Beyonce sneezed on stage. And I was like, okay. And I went to the next channel and it was like, blah, blah, blah. And so it's going to be 77 and sunny. Over to Connie. Last night, Beyonce sneezed. And I was like, seriously? And I went to the Today Show, who did an in-depth report on Beyonce sneezing, because they had a picture of her on the stage. And I was just like, that really can't be a story when I'm listening to the CIA guy getting, you know, impeached and all this other stuff. And I was like, I'm just done with TV at this point.
Wow. Yeah, that explains it pretty well.
So, yeah. So go listen to Jen's show and turn off your TV and get informed, and then go vote.
So. Yes, please vote and register now, because there's a long window.
Yeah.
So you awesome. Have to do it now.
Well, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. This was really fun.
And there you have it. Again, website congressionaldish.com. You can find her in iTunes if you want to subscribe. You can also find her app on Android and on iOS. Everything will be out at schoolofpodcasting.com/530. And want to thank you so much for tuning in. Again, if you're going to be in the New Jersey, Philadelphia area, go to Podcast Mid-Atlantic, go sign up, and it's going to be a great time. I'm really looking forward to that this weekend. Also, next year, start thinking about it, PodFest.us is right around the corner in February. I will be there. If you plan on coming, I just heard David Hooper is going to be there. That's going to be very cool. Love to hang out with the genius behind Red Podcast. And if you're coming, let me know. We're looking to put together a little party of some sort. So that'll be fun. Please let me know. Also, I'm still looking for, if you're listening to this right now on some sort of phone, how about taking a picture, just a little selfie. Doesn't have to be anything. And send it to dave@schoolofpodcasting.com. That is dave@schoolofpodcasting.com. I know I don't want to get in, since we're kind of talking politics today, I don't want to get too deep into this, but, you know, Donald Trump wants to build a wall. I'm building my own. And in my office, I'm putting everybody's picture on the wall. And speaking of politics, I thought I would tie this in with Jen's episode. And one of the, depending on who you talk to, one of the interesting, more famous, I guess you could say, presidents in the U.S., was John F. Kennedy. Now, John F. Kennedy was a little before my time, but he had a whole speech about going to the moon. And so I've taken that speech and I've tweaked it just a bit. So with that, I now give you, if Kennedy lived today, it would probably sound something like, we choose to podcast. Yes, we choose to podcast in this. And he even said, I think it was decade. It's decade. Who taught this guy how to speak? He's from Boston era. Yeah. We choose to podcast in this decade and do other things. Not because it's easy, but because it's hard. Because a podcast will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we are willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one which we intend to see in iTunes and the others like Stitcher. Think about this. We've said, and Jen is a classic example of this. She makes her podcast look easy. You just read a bill, you talk about it, a couple golf swings, you're done. No, weeks of work goes into that. So the good ones make it look easy. But the skills you develop from podcasting, the confidence you will build from doing this, the ability to focus on a topic, the skills you will get at networking with people, and just your personal skills. We choose to podcast not because it's easy, but because it's hard, because a podcast will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills, because that challenge is one that we are willing to accept. So challenge accepted. And I know for me, it's helped me uncover what my strengths are. And it's also helped me uncover what I'm not so good at times. So on this somewhat political episode of the School of Podcasting, I do want to thank you so much for tuning in. I am available for one-on-one consulting. If you go out to schoolofpodcasting.com, click on the Book Now button, and the School of Podcasting will be back open next month. And if you are interested in that, go out to schoolofpodcasting.com/newsletter, sign up, and you, the newsletter people, are going to be people that get first crack at it at the open seats. And when we open back up, we're bringing gifts. We're going to give away a couple microphones. We're going to give away a couple free players, all sorts of fun stuff. So start brushing yourself off. Start thinking of topics. It's almost time to launch that podcast. And again, if you're like, I can't wait, I'm available for one-on-one consulting. So thanks so much for tuning in. Coming up in future episodes, I talked last week about jargon, and I'm working with the members of the School of Podcasting. We came up with a giant list of podcasting jargon, and I'm going to do my best to go through that and deliver it in plain English. So if you've ever wondered what kilobits per second meant, We'll explain that. If you've ever wondered what a double ender is, you're like, what? A who? What? Yeah, we're going to go through all those in the future. Also had an interview with an author about growing your confidence. What if you go, nobody would listen to me? That's coming up in the future as well. So hope to see you in Philly this coming weekend. Thanks so much for tuning in. Until next week, class is dismissed. Take care and God bless.
Surveillance cameras around the bar to capture the action.
What? You don't want to watch Bart Rescue?
The bartender that he's talking to.
I don't want to watch Animal Planet. You always want to watch Animal Planet. Okay, Animal Planet it is.